This is Jake Rosen. I'm here with my son David, and we're talking about politics. Actually, we're arguing about politics. Well, sometimes we're talking, sometimes we're arguing. Why don't you join us? Well, listen, Dave, did you listen to the debate? Did you get to the television or the radio and hear the debate?
Yes, sir, I did.
Was it an ordeal for you to do so, or was it something you really wanted to do?
No, I found the debate itself very entertaining, and I watched it with a friend of mine, and it was interesting to see someone else's feedback. She was a woman in her 30s, and interesting to see how she, you know, interacted with what she was seeing. Didn't maybe have the same zeal as a person like you or I does for each and every nuance, and you have zeal for nuance that I don't necessarily have zeal for, and vice versa. What'd you think?
Well, let's face it, you pale in comparison when it comes to really being involved in politics compared to me. I've always said that to you, and I hope you'll straighten up. They say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but in your case, I'm not so sure. I don't know.
Maybe I'm from another tree. Who knows?
Maybe you're from another tree. I don't know. But listen, people are saying that Trump lost the debate. People are saying that the point of the debate was to see who was going to beat the other guy in making their points. I didn't go into the thing thinking about that at all. To me, this was not a debate in the way that one thinks of debates with the debating teams. In other words, there's a question, should the United States outlaw baseball? And one team says yes, and one team and argues for yes.
In those
and the other
debates,
team says
the
no.
People use real sentences, though.
What?
In those debates, people speak in full sentences.
They speak in full sentences. They speak logically. They try to make a case. They try to win over the audience to the logic of what they're saying. That's not what this was. This was each side appealing to its own group, not much caring about the other group. Nobody on Donald Trump's side could have possibly imagined, if they were in their right mind, that Donald Trump was going to convince Hillary supporters to support Trump. And no,
well, maybe,
and no
maybe,
Hillary
maybe not.
Supporter could have imagined that they were going to win over Trump supporters, right?
I don't agree.
You don't agree?
I think that you're a dyed-in-the-wool political thinker, and I think that, you know, there are, for example, a demographic of 18 to 25-year-olds who have said things such as, career politicians made us live through the Great Recession. We don't want career politicians.
You just made my point. You just argued for my point. I'm saying that neither side was interested in winning over the adherents of the other side. They were looking to win over other people. In the case of Hillary Clinton, her job, what she needs to be interested in is winning over the people of the age group that you're in and younger who don't want to vote, who don't see why they should vote.
Okay. Well, if that's true, then I think that her tactics, which is to scare people about a world of Trump, have traction. They think that people are afraid of a world with Trump in it. And I think that was amplified by the, rambling demagoguery of Trump and Trump's inability to articulate a point and Trump's inability to stay on message. And in the aftermath, as we look at what the coverage has been, Trump's inability to accept the reality of what happened, which was that he's blaming the moderator, blaming the microphone, and at the same time telling his rallies that 80% of participants or 80% of viewers polled said he won the debate, which he said at a rally in Florida on the next day.
Well,
from the Drudge Report, that was
she was absolutely right. When she said to him, you live in your own reality, she's right. She's completely right. Nobody who saw that debate and nobody who heard any of the interviews after this event could possibly have imagined that Trump emerged on top.
Well, what do you think about Hillary's performance first? If we have a foregone conclusion that Trump's performance was not great, or at least we can talk about it after we talk about Hillary, what did you think of Hillary?
I don't think Hillary did what she needed to do to animate people who supported Bernie Sanders. to come out and vote for her. And that's her task. I don't think she did it. I think she spoke well. I think she spoke cogently. I think she put forward intelligent points in complete sentences, but they're not the right points. And they're not the inspiring points, and they're not the points that that age group, as I understand that age group, is interested in.
Well, you know, if we look at the points, I think that you have, you know, a good conclusion yourself in that these candidates are thin on proposals. And frankly, it's unclear that whether or not the event that we are calling a debate allowed itself to have any proposals. So in years past, people would have a signature plan. For example, President Obama had a healthcare plan that he liked to run on. And, you know, George W. Bush had a tax cut that he ran on. And, you know, Reagan had, you know, a platform, and his platform was basically, you know, compassionate conservatism. And
I understand that. But look, you know yourself that if Bernie Sanders was up there debating Trump, Bernie Sanders would have said, listen, there's only one issue here. It's inequality. It's the root of all evil. The country is falling apart because of it. It's got to be solved, and so forth and so on. And he may or
And he would have effectively drilled down on those points, whereas Hillary remained poised, selling an image of know-how, experience, and an ear to the nation that we live in, and selling herself as an ambassador who would think deeply about choices she made when she made them and not just shoot from the hip.
Right, which all is very interesting, but it's not the point at all, at least not to the people who are looking for, where are you taking us? What is it you want to create for us? So that they can see that it's useful for them to support her. Why will they support her? They won't. They'll do what they always do. They'll stay home.
But you're not going to support Hillary Clinton, I take it, are you?
I'll support Hillary Clinton in Pennsylvania if it looks like Trump might win Pennsylvania.
But you don't support, I mean, the question here is, if you have a sensibility about yourself in general, not just us personally, but if one has a sensibility about themselves, that they want to see a world that doesn't, you know, fall apart into anarchy and chaos with the, you know, idea that business can solve every problem and government can only ruin things. And that,
by the way, Hillary Clinton believes business can solve every problem. She's a great believer in that.
That might be true, but at least she knows how to spell government.
That's true. And I'm not arguing that. And though she's a front for corporate interests, she's not a fascist. And he is.
I mean, I saw the Trump rally afterwards where he said that he'd won 80-20 and, you know, not a non-white face in the House. And you see these Daily Show interviews of the people that he, you know, gained support from, and they're just buffoons. I mean, you know, they say the most ridiculous things, like, you know, Bill Clinton and Magic Johnson had an affair. It was homosexual. Or they say that, or Trump's own lines, that the birtherism movement was worthwhile because he got Barack Obama to produce his birth certificate, as if that was a result.
But who actually cares about his birth certificate? What's the difference? What if he never produced his birth certificate?
Well, then he'd be breaking the law.
Why would he be breaking the law? There's no law that says you have to produce your birth certificate. They made up they trumped up an issue, literally. There was no
issue.
All right,
so let me tell you what the friend of mine thought when we were watching the debate.
All
she
right.
was unable to listen to it after a certain time. She just stopped caring. She said, I know who I'm voting for. I'm voting for Hillary Clinton. There's nothing these people can say that will change my mind. And this guy's an idiot.
There you go. So, proves my point. She's committed. She's not going over to him. There's nothing he could possibly say that will bring her over to him. The only question for her is, should she vote or should she not vote?
But don't Republicans think that in a different world, there could be arguments that would make, you know, I mean, people vote for the Republican platform? I mean, don't some people think in the Republican Party that a certain candidate, now I don't know who, but a certain, you know, business first candidate could speak cogently about balancing the budget or whatever other crap they, you know, sell.
Don't forget there's two different kinds of Republicans, basically speaking. There's the Republican Party that existed before Trump got involved in politics, which was a business-oriented, business-run, Chamber of Commerce-dominated party, which had, at the margins, some right-wing fanatics, some evangelical Christian people who wanted a theocracy, you know, the Christian version of Iran type of government. And there's the Trump movement, which is a movement of nihilism, of anarchy, of authoritarianism, of centrally directed capitalism in the interest of capitalists.
If she failed and he's got those votes in the bag, I mean, didn't he fail worse? Because if he already has those votes, he could broaden his base.
He can't broaden his base.
Oh, he could say, look, I'm socially progressive.
But he's not.
I don't say global warming is completely ludicrous. I don't tell everyone that being gay is a sin and that we should, you know, persecute gays. As much as I've said I'm pro-life, I'm not going to be an activist on this issue.
He can't say any of those things and have the people who are voting for him continue to vote for him.
Why?
Because they don't believe what he with those things
he says. Because anyone who listens to his to what he doesn't speak. You know, I went to a seminar recently and they talked about sales, and they said 7% of what you say is useful in communication. That what I mean by that is only 7% of your words really matter.
What about the other 93%?
Well, 38% of that is your tone, the way you say what you are saying. And 55% of that is your body language. And so what if you're on the radio or on the phone? Well, then they say that that all comes through your tone. So he could literally speak like a Muppet. And it's just the fact that he speaks with a certain voice and cadence that matters.
Well, then how do you explain Bernie? You and I both heard Bernie. He's no speaker. He didn't speak with a particularly great cadence. His body language wasn't great at all. It was no body language as far as I could see. It was people paying attention to that 7%.
Well, he did lose.
But he did get 14 million votes.
And he might have won for all we know because we don't count the votes.
Right.
And, you know, we can only see, you know, what's out there. But I will say that his supporters, you know, look, we have a gerrymandered electorate. It's a silly system. And if people voted their interests, no way this government and this country would exist. But, you know, people have conflated their interest with being, part of a winning team. They think if they just are sycophantic enough to a big enough demagogue, then that person will make them proud.
Well, that's right, because they have a consumerist approach to politics. You buy it. You pick out the toothpaste you like. You pick out the politician you like. The toothpaste you like will make your teeth white and without cavities. The politician you like will make your life good without problems. People don't realize that politics is something they have to create through their own struggle because they're not taught that. They're taught that everything is consumerism. But do you want to know something? Nothing in life that's valuable is consumerism. Consumerism is the death of a useful life. You've got to be active in life. You've got to understand the things that are before you. You've got to make an opinion and inform them, and you've got to go out and struggle. Then things are meaningful.
But without not accepting what you're saying, you know, let's look at it. We have two representatives of two major parties, one of whom will likely be the president of this next administration, and they had at this moment an 80 million person event, which had some results that will sway the outcome of this election.
And do you think the woman that you were with is going to want to see either of the next two debates?
No,
there's nothing in it for her, right?
Not interested. But didn't Trump lose then?
Yes, Trump also lost. Yes. I'm not arguing that Trump won. I'm just saying that Clinton didn't do what she...
Well, you could make the point that Trump wins if Hillary can't pin him down and people lose interest in seeing them contrasted, because that doesn't give her the chance to rally her troops, and it strengthens people like Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, who themselves are not necessarily, you know, as blemished as these two. I mean, look, she can't...
Listen, Gary Johnson is as blemished as you can get. Anybody running for president who says, what's Aleppo, doesn't belong running for president. Anybody who's running for president at the head of a party and somebody says to him, with this party that you're running for believes A, B, C, D, and E, and he says, well, I don't believe any of those things. Well, why in the hell is he running for president at the head of that party? It's ridiculous. It's hypocritical. It's a lie.
Well, you can make that point of each one of those candidates with the exception of Jill Stein.
I'll make it.
One of them, but they all won the nomination of that party.
I understand that. But the point that I'm making is that Hillary Clinton's task is not the same thing as Donald Trump's task. Hillary Clinton's task is to mobilize young people who don't want to vote, don't see why they should vote for her. That's her task. I don't think that she's necessarily doing it. And I don't think that the debate did that.
I totally disagree. I couldn't disagree more. Let's look at the facts. She had a job. Her job was to present something other than attacking Trump while attacking Trump. She did a great job of attacking Trump. And she also figured out a path which allowed her to cast her identity politics. If we agree that the issues aren't really accepted and supported as much, she created an identity that said, you know, I'm willing to be inclusive. I'm willing to not get caught up in rhetoric. I'm willing to be studious and prepared and have an even hand. And these are qualities that you should want in somebody who's supposed to represent you, because I will listen to you.
Well, the great leader of the Republicans in the last two generations was Ronald Reagan, who had none of those qualities. He was a man who wouldn't read anything that was given to him. He couldn't pay attention to what was said. His attention span was minuscule, and he didn't want to know any details. In fact, he didn't want to do too much. He wanted to take a nap in the afternoon, and basically that's what all he was interested in doing, except making inspirational speeches. That he liked to do. And that he was great at. And he created a huge and powerful movement doing that. Other people handled the details. So Hillary says, not good enough. She's going to be a hands-on manager. It's not that important to be a hands-on manager. It's important to articulate a vision that is appealing to the majority of the people who are the average man in the street and woman in the street, the average
working person. Well, she had one good moment that the press has picked up on, which is that she personalized herself in terms of this identity politics field of way of analyzing, you know, the political picture. And that was that she said that her grandparents were mill workers, and they, if they had worked for Trump, they would have been stiffed. And I think in that, people are saying, if they were listening, that here, this is a person, she came from somewhere, she went to somewhere, and, you know, she wasn't, you know, always the former first lady. She was, at some time, you know, the product of an ascendant middle-class family.
Well, she actually said that she was the product of a working-class family, although she...
Right, which was a working-class family.
Yeah, yeah, and that's right. People, when people heard that, they thought that was pretty neat. They like that. That's true. But that was one sentence.
Well, there's already 50% of the actual sentences that Donald Trump created, because the sentences include subject and predicates.
But I'm not trying to compare the two in terms of this one said that and this one said this. We know that Trump represents racist ideas, racist policies, homophobic ideas, sexist ideas.
Thinks he represents. He doesn't think of himself as a racist.
So what?
He doesn't think of himself as a fascist.
So what?
He thinks of himself as a guy who knows how to play poker, knows how to look at you and say, I call your bluff. knows how to say, I don't care what you think the rules are. I'm going to change the rules right before your eyes, and I'm going to pressure you, and you're going to do what I say because of my pressure. He's a guy who's thinking, if we have a diplomatic crisis, I'm going to mobilize 5 million men, and then I'm going to see what you have to say, China. That's what he's saying. He's saying, you don't like what we have to do with our trade deficits? We're going to tariff all of your goods. That's what he's saying. He's saying that if we need to pay for something, we're going to requisition oil. He's not saying imperialism is wrong or trade or protectionism is wrong. He's saying by any means necessary, we are going to elevate the white middle class or the middle class by imperialism.
That's
through
right.
Through our tactics that we have to perpetuate self-interest.
Yeah, well,
on the global stage.
Trump, listen, I grew up with guys like Trump. I worked with guys like Trump. Trump is a bully from Queens. He's a middle-class kid who's a bully from Queens who's able to swagger because his dad owns the construction company. And so you can't push him around because he can fire you. He doesn't like what you're saying. It was very telling. At the end of the debate, or toward the end of the debate, the moderator asked him some question. So he went off on some tangent. So the moderator tried to bring him back to the question. And Trump just looked at him and says, you asked me a question? Did you ask me a question? You know, he sounded like a Robert De Niro in some movie that where De Niro was paying some deranged taxi driver.
Well, that is interesting. Are you leaking now that in 2019, in his greatest role ever, Robert De Niro starring?
That's right.
As Trump.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Now, will this
right.
be a standalone film or will this be a trilogy?
Well, I hope it's not going to be a trilogy.
Trump Part 1.
Yeah.
Trump Part 2.
Yeah, Trump Part Your Hair.
Well, then they could have the gold edition, you know?
Nah, Trump is a... Trump is everything the Republicans deserve. They created a party that had to have a Trump. When they started with their racism, when they decided to build a party based on white racism, inevitably they were going to end up with a bully.
Well, let's rewind it back. You know, if we take the Bernies out of the picture, let's think about this. I'm speaking now as one of the few people who've been able to survive this system, you know, of no pensions, no assistance, no government programs that help me, you know. Now, there are other people who've survived too, but, like, you know, I'm in a totally commission-only sales business, which many Americans are, or you're getting a very low wage with the imagination of a bonus that is sometimes is completely impossible and unattainable. And, you know, these Republicans are often, you know, championing this 1099 income position where you have no income tax withheld. And, you know,
it
creates an economy that's unsustainable and impossible and really not long. You know, they're always talking about balancing the budget by cutting Social Security, but that's not balancing the budget. That's just creating more and more chaos and disorganizing society at its, you know, bare seams. But Hillary Clinton's people also believe, like you say, in that type of meritocracy, as they call it. But they want to pepper it with winners and losers. And that's where Trump, if he could, you know, pick a policy or pick a point or create a policy, could say, look, we're going to have these social programs. You need certain social programs. I'm not going to kill them all. But, you know, I mean, he doesn't stand for anything. Because, he's, like you say, he's just a construction worker's son who, you know, has all the cash.
No. He's not a construction worker's son. He's a construction owner's son. Construction boss's son.
Right. You're right. My bad, yo. But Hillary, you know, also doesn't know what she's saying, but she knows how to say it, because what she's proposing, which is what, you know, we've lived through President Obama, is still the privatization of all things.
That's right.
It's still like
the plain fact of the matter is this capitalist system is not working. It's come crashing down, and it's very hard for them to get it started back up. It works very fine at this moment for the people who own it. Their profits are at an all-time high. It works terribly for everybody else who has to live in it, which is 95% of the people.
Let me ask you a question. If democracy and equality are truly, truly myths, don't we just live in a just sort of three steps away from slavery? I mean, if you just say, if you forget about the BS that they, you know, we no longer have a religious caliphate to, give us virtue and to send us on to the pearly gates. But we do, and that's pervasive in many areas. But meritocracy has replaced virtue, religious virtue as an ideal to
right. But meritocracy is no good. Meritocracy sucks. You can't have a decent life for the bulk of the people based on meritocracy, because the basis of meritocracy is elitism. Meritocracy just says if you follow these rules, then the elite has some justified existence, instead of being chosen by God or chosen by elements of birth. But the best people should rule. Why should the best people rule? Why are the worst people not equal to worthy of ruling?
But what makes them
the worst?
Before we go down that road, comrade, if we could just for a moment, sort of dissect what is the line that Hillary is needing to unify, because she's dealing with the Sanders wing of her party, who she's not able to speak to, because they want, very cogently and specifically, to use the huge largesse of 35% of all of the monies that everyone makes every year to be redistributed in a way that keeps people off the streets and food on people's mouths and roofs on people's heads. And, there can be systems that are less autocratic than other countries, but certainly systems in place to provide basic services based on a shared commitment through taxation, which is one, people call it socialism, other people call it government. And then on the other end, you've got the Paul Ryans of people who say, we're taxing
Paul Ryan is Donald Trump with a polite veneer. Paul Ryan's ideas don't make any sense whatsoever. If you examine Paul Ryan's ideas, they just implode. You can't examine them. There's nothing there. In fact, he says, when you say to him, there's no details, he says, we'll work them out later. It's not possible to work them out. The ideas are dopey. They're no smarter. They're no better than Donald Trump. Trump is more entertaining.
But see, that's the thing. See, that's where, we're talking about the debate. But if we really did parse this information, Trump's base knows that the right, the ultra right that's now lost the party, was full of it too.
It's right.
That they're, for all of their bluster, they had no substance either.
Well, they did have substance. They wanted everything for the very rich, for the 1%. That's their substance.
Let me tell you what the Hillary people are selling now. And what my friend said, and I don't know how much longer we have, so just quickly, she said she's qualified. And if she's qualified, that's what matters.
Exactly. That's the meritocratic answer. She's qualified. That's the meritocratic answer. My answer is, I want a person who points in the right direction. There's plenty of qualified people to manage things. That's the way it is. And that's the way politics is. That's the way government works. That's the way society works. That's just the way it is. If you don't have the right direction, what's the point of being qualified? You'll just be able to do the wrong thing better. She'll get elected. I'm confident that Trump won't get elected. I'm confident that Hillary will get elected. She'll get elected by a lot of votes. She'll get elected by a few votes, but she'll get elected. Her claim is she'll work with the Republicans to implement policies. I don't believe one word of it. She won't be able to. They won't work with her. But if she did work with the Republicans to implement policies, they would be Republican policies. Who the hell wants them? So then why would I want her to be elected? This is a rotten system.
Well, the only reason a left-winger would want Hillary to be elected is that there's no evidence in history that a more powerful left-wing movement came out of a more powerful right-wing movement.
That's correct.
You have to move by degrees.
That's correct. I don't dispute that. I agree with that. Unless it comes crashing down in war and something emerges out of the rubble of war.
Even when it's come crashing down in war, has not, from the ashes of that destruction, come a more progressive and egalitarian society. It's just become a worse and more repressive society.
Well, I don't know. The French Revolution emerged from war.
Ah, the French Revolution, which gave birth to Napoleon.
Which was the destruction of the revolution, not the continuation of the revolution. Napoleon ended the revolution. He didn't continue it.
Napoleon pacified the revolution.
Pacify means ending, putting to sleep. Pacify. No. Let's not distort history here. You studied this stuff. You read all those books.
En plus,
I was there.
Ce n'est pas.
The fact of the matter is, whether or not they know it, what most working people are saying, Trump supporters, Trump opponents, what most young people are saying, Bernie supporters, Bernie opponents, is that capitalism has failed them. They like something else. They call it a rigged system. They call it a corrupt system. Whatever it is, they don't quite understand how capitalism works. But this is capitalism. It's a rigged, corrupt system. It works for the people who own it. It doesn't work for the people who work in it. They need socialism.
All right, Dad. Well, I'm going to tell my people that tomorrow when I show them properties to invest in. And I hope they call me back the next day.
Don't mix and match. We're talking here. We're analyzing things.
Well, I appreciate your vision of the
future. I was with you and your friend watching that show, watching that, I'll call it a show. Yeah. If I were with you and your friend watching that show and she said, I'm tuning out, I would say to her, I know why you're tuning out and I agree with you. And here's why I think you shouldn't tune out. You should tune out to them, but you shouldn't tune out to social activity and politics.
Well, I think you're right. And I think that, you know, in studying the history of this country, as I'm reading about Hamilton now, you know, it's the founding fathers very much wanted to eliminate the ability of the rabble-rousing crowd to really influence the affairs of the more qualified elites to manage their own government.
Exactly. From the beginning. All right. We'll talk more about this kind of stuff next week.